Who are you?
My name is Sheila Hewlett, and I guess I'm a volunteer with No One Is Illegal, amongst other things.
And what do you do?
Right now I'm in school still, and I work with No One Is Illegal, mostly, so it takes up the time. I do a lot of art stuff for them and design work, also.
Great. Recently, No One Is Illegal had an action. It was a national day of action by No One Is Illegal groups across the country against Minister of Immigration Jason Kenney. Here in Toronto, there was a series of sort of creative actions. Could you talk a little bit about those creative actions and whether you thought it was a sort of successful approach for political organizing?
Well, I think, like, there was a few ideas on the table for what we were going to do in our city, because they were, I think the call came from Vancouver, and then they did their thing, and then there was stuff in, like, Montreal and Winnipeg and here, and so we were discussing what we were going to do, and the sort of standard stuff came up, like doing a rally, or, I mean, even those are important things. I'm not trying to reduce the value of a rally, but I think that after the G20, we were a little bit tapped. And I think we needed to think of more creative ways to express our dissent and try to change people's minds or bring things into the forefront of people's minds about this particular issue, which is Jason Kenney, who's a pretty scary guy. So we needed to address those things creatively. And I think we did that. It was an interesting process, but we did what we could. It was good.
So what happened on that day? Did you run us through it?
Sure. I actually, unfortunately, couldn't be there because I have to work a lot. I have expensive school habits. But I made a big papier-mâché head of Kenny, who, funnily enough, looks a lot like Fred Flintstone. Basically, we were going to have a wandering Kenny head guy. Like, it was something that could fit onto somebody's head. It wasn't like a giant puppet, it was just like a head thing. And I made some signs that looked like speech bubbles. And so a few people wore the head around town and engaged with the public. And the signs said various things that were relevant to the day. And then at the end, there was a soccer game, and there was a giant printout of Kenny, of his face in the park, and then people kicked, like, eventually it was destroyed by kicking soccer balls through it, so there's a bunch of people playing soccer and ultimately destroying the image that was put up.
Yeah, and how do you think, like, that was sort of different? Like, you talked a bit about the difference between protests and looking for more creative outlets, but how effective do you think that was at just, I guess, engaging people and getting out, the objective of that day, talking about Jason Kenney?
Well, I think a lot of times when it comes to political actions, you're preaching to the choir a lot of the time. And that, so the people who come out to rallies, people who come out to, like, panel discussions and that kind of thing, are people who always come out to rallies and always come out to panel discussions for things that they're already interested in, they might not know about. I think in doing, like, art actions and more creative actions, you have the opportunity to actually speak to people who might not understand or know about the message that you're trying to get across. And I think that's how people's minds are changed, is talking to them one-on-one and engaging them in a way that's interesting and that isn't, like, scary, or it gives them a chance to speak back and have some dialogue as opposed to being just barked at, kind of thing. And I think that was an effective tool, like what we ended up doing for Kenny Day, worked out really well.
Yeah. And there's this quote, I don't know the original source, but I know a hip-hop artist from Detroit, Invincible, has said it in interviews, and it goes, the role of an artist is to make revolution irresistible. I'm wondering what you think about that quote.
It's a good quote. I think about that quote a lot, actually, and I'm really inspired. I'm inspired by a lot of artists, but Emery Douglas from the Black Panthers is probably, like, the one that's sort of closest aligned to, like, my politics as well as his art practice is very similar, I guess, like, the lines that we take. And basically, it's along the same lines. He said things like, I'm paraphrasing, that any art that doesn't address, like, a social issue or a social ill or tries to either illustrate or confront those issues is just pablum. It's just keeping people asleep, or it's trying to sell them stuff, which is another way of keeping people asleep. And it's basically the same thing of making revolution irresistible. They were a revolutionary group, obviously, and I think that in my own practice is something I've really struggled with, and it's taken a long time for me to come to terms with it and try to figure out how to manage it. So it's something that I think is important and true.
Yeah. And I guess day-to-day working with a group like No One Is Illegal, what's sort of the role of art in social movement organizing? Like, how do we, if the goal of an artist is to make revolution irresistible, do you do that on your own? Do you do that collectively? And what does it look like when you're working with a group like No One Is Illegal?
It's tricky, right? Like, there's not a linear answer to that. Because I think what it does is twofold. I think at some level, some of what we do, you're trying to get people out, you're trying to tell them where to go, like, go to this place at this time, and some stuff's gonna happen. You're selling something, kind of, right? At least in, like, the paradigm that we exist in now. So there's some things that you make that are sort of graphic design, honestly, right? That are trying to encourage people to do something, encourage people to go somewhere, think about something, that kind of thing. So the role of art in that sense is sort of like propaganda. I think we have to own that. Of course, we have the best intentions, so it's different. The other thing I think that art does, or the role of it within, like, radical groups, is changing the culture, I think, is the other side of it, right? So I think that people understand things in a narrative, and I think the easiest way to understand a narrative is through, images or music or things that tell a story, like, literally a narrative. That's how to change people's minds, if you present them with something that's possible, and illustrate it for them, whether it's a story or singing or whatever it is, it's easier for them to conceive of, and they can understand things with a lot more nuance and subtlety than if you're just trying to get across abstract concepts through, I don't know, just a lot of text or talking, right? So.
And I mean, one example that comes to mind for me talking about providing this narrative to make sort of your imagination grow, see what's possible, is the annual May Day of Actions. And I mean, this year there was, you know, banner drops, 50-foot banner drops the year before, banner drops this year, there was performances from rooftops. And when the theme of your march is saying that we're taking back the city, that we're trying to make spaces, you know, accessible for all people regardless of status, to actually have those sort of, you know, powerful moments where people are doing things that you thought were impossible, I think it's really inspiring. I don't know if you have any thoughts on stuff like that, the way that actions too can be informed by art, and then art, you know, kind of to actually, yeah, look what, like, the communities we want to produce. It's not just a, you know, an art thing, like, look, we produced a pretty thing, but it's actually part of constructing the communities that we want to live in.
Well, for sure, like, it has to tie into what you're doing, right? Or it comes off as disingenuous or, like, marketing or something like that. Again, it's the same thing. Like, I think images, I think a 50-foot banner dropping from something when you're saying there is no public space, the space is extremely mandated and militarized, and there are methods and actions that we can do to take back what is, you know, rightfully ours, as the public, as who we are, just as people. And I think seeing that and being there, and then even if you couldn't be there, being able to produce those images again, for people who couldn't be there to see, so that it's sort of reoccurring and keeps continuing after the event is over, I think is pretty powerful stuff. Like, I think that's something that doesn't go away. We're still talking about stuff that happened in the 60s because of that, right? So I think that's important and it's good.
Yeah, and so when we're doing public mass organizing, one of the main things that always comes up, especially when you're in meetings, is the poster, who's going to produce the poster, what it's going to look like. But I guess also just as someone interested in posters who sometimes makes posters, I'm interested in your thoughts, because it's sort of, sometimes it's just sort of this thing where it's almost like this object, this art object. But yeah, like, what is the role of a poster in organizing? You know, like, so much time goes into it, but what is it? Is it the idea, is it usefulness sort of waning, or is it still a really, I don't know, like, key tool in the box of community organizing?
Well, I don't know, like, in the face of, like, social media, right? Like, you're probably, when you look at the things you have to do in a day, you're probably looking at your calendar online, you're looking at Facebook things, you're looking at Twitter things or whatever. And poster making is very complicated, especially when it comes to a collaborative process like you have in, like, a group like No One Is Illegal. And it's not always easy. Like, it can be very difficult, but, and, like, a friend of ours, Mac, has said, there is no perfect poster. Like, at some point you have to let it go, and it just is what it is. I think there is a place for them, along the lines of what we were saying before, that having images and words in a city that are not trying to sell you something, that are not trying to keep you asleep, I think that's a big part of what posters do, even if it doesn't necessarily get people out. My experience is what gets people out is talking to them, like, this is happening, do you want to go, you know what I mean, having that dialogue, that's really what gets people out. Posters, I think, are just like a reminder of what's on your mind in terms of what you're going to do, or just like reclaiming space as ours. And I think that that's probably, honestly, the primary thing that they do, but it's also like handy to have them around, you know?
And what about the challenges of producing art or producing posters, where you're trying to represent communities, represent struggles, and there's this sort of challenge between victimization, empowerment, representation? Like, how do you balance and juggle these issues?
I butted up against that, obviously, quite a bit, because you can make some extremely powerful imagery that deals with crappy things that happen, right? Like, having, like, cuffed hands, or illustrating police brutality, or something like that. Those are powerful images, and they do cause, like, a direct emotion in the viewer, which is a lot of times what you're kind of going after. You want to change someone's mind, you need to make them feel something a lot of the time. So I think there's a place for those posters and those images. The problem I've run into is the incessant use of like rally images, which are extremely good images. They're very valuable images. It's triumphant. Like, even if the rally is about something that's horrible, like a horrible thing that happened or a horrible thing that is happening or some systemic bad news, having a rally photo is just like people coming together and it's hopeful. I mean, and there's not a lot of hope going on like these days, or if ever. So yeah, that's something. And like representing communities as not, or bodies, is extremely difficult. The politics around it are really complicated and endless. I generally deal in like silhouettes or extremely like graphically not intense images. So reduced images, extreme, like that kind of thing. So because the more you can universalize an image, the better it is, so that you can put yourself in the position of being in it or looking at it, and then you're not exploiting an image, you're not exploiting a person. There's a lot there. Like, it can get really complicated, so you gotta be careful, for sure.
Definitely. Can you take us a little bit through your path? Like, how did you end up here? Why is it that you're so active now producing art, and in particular doing it with a social movement organization? How did you get here?
That's a pretty long story, but I'll try to keep it condensed. I actually went to art school at Sheridan College for glass blowing, which is really weird, right? But because I'm kind of obsessed with light and seeing and what those things mean and that kind of thing, so it seemed natural. But the more I did it, the more I realized what I was producing didn't make any sense. What I was producing, like, we went to a show called SOFA in Chicago, which is sculptural objects, functional art, because I was into making stuff that was useful, that was important to me. So I've always had that going on, I guess, right? But the thing is that to be extremely successful, the measure of success for the kind of crafts that I was doing was having extremely rich people be interested in your art, and then either, it's still sort of like a patron kind of system going on in the art world. And the more I learned about the art world, the more alienated and weirded out and sickened I was by the whole thing, like art dealers and art agents. And it's just like one of the most, and I don't mean like exploitative in the sense where like my body's really going through it because I'm doing some labor, but exploitative in the sense that I am thinking of and producing and doing all the work, and I'm being exploited in the sense of like how much I'm getting back from the market for it. And it really creeped me out. I'm like, what is this stuff for? What is it for? Like, glass is just decoration. It's useless. It's fragile. Like, it's beautiful, but it didn't mean anything. And then I had a teacher there who I saw Bamboozled by Spike Lee. It's a film that specifically deals with the exploitation of artists, and specifically black artists. And then she got me reading Frantz Fanon, and then, you know, it was all downhill from there, I guess.
And so now you're doing work with Known as Illegal, and I guess the last question I just wanted to ask is, you know, you have some formal art training, I think you've also, you know, self-taught a lot of stuff, but, like, so who is an artist, who produces art, like, what actually is art, who produces culture, like, I'm interested in your perspective on that, too.
Who produces, it's tricky, right, like, because the definition of art, like, it depends, right, like, on who you're asking, and who you're asking will tell, everyone will tell you something different. Like, I think ultimately, art has been said to be a reflection of the culture that it's in, but I don't really know if that's what I would call art. I think art has to produce change. I think for art to be of use and to have, like, I don't know, like aesthetics and beauty and that kind of stuff, it can get pretty meaningless, but if it produces change, then it's worth something. And that if you're in a gallery system or you're producing stuff because it's beautiful, that's really great. Like, you should keep doing that if that's what you like. But if you're not forcing or producing things to change, like, the society that we're in, you're really complicit in it. And I just have a hard time being complicit in that without at least doing what I can. So in terms of, like, who makes art, I think everyone does.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I appreciate about just, like, social movements kind of invert the idea of, like, what is political. We don't wait for politicians or people in power to take action. Everyone is a political actor. And I think in the same way, when, you know, we're all engaged in banner painting and postering and producing art and ideas and being there in public with a Kenny head and kicking soccer balls as part of games, it's sort of also inverting that idea of who is an artist. It's not just a profession. It's something mm-hmm. that people do in our own communities every day.
For sure, for sure. Absolutely, yeah. Because, like, I think you see, like, the hysteria that people get when you're like, oh, you made art or you are an artist. They become extremely fearful and self-depreciating and stuff like that, and it's just totally... And I think because we're so specialized, because we have a market system, I guess at the end of the day, capitalism's always the problem, right? But just that if you're not producing something that produces money, it's not deemed as useful. And I think that's just inherently not true, actually not true, right? So.
Cool. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.